Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the Riptide. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Cretans, Cretans.
How's it going, John?
It's going well. It's going well. It's a nice, warm, sunny afternoon here in Southern California. I understand they're having freezing rain and snow in various parts of the country, but pretty nice.
Where you're at.
Now
we're... You come from freezing rain and snow parts of the country.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of miss it, you know, small amount. Not today. Today's pretty pleasant.
And people talk about California and they're like, I don't know. I wouldn't be in California with all the earthquakes and all that. And it's just like just
fires and
the... I mean, really, come on. And for all the fires that we've been having this year, it makes up for it with just all the beautiful weather that we have.
Yeah.
Really is a glorious place.
Yep.
Speaking of glorious places.
Indiana.
Right. Right next to our good friend, John Blickman.
That's right.
Hanging out with John Blickman is a glorious place.
Yeah. Many good times to be had in Indiana. I can remember several.
That's when I think of John Blickman, I think of having a good time. I do. He is a fun dude to hang out with. And a great dude for creating amazing brewing equipment.
Yeah. You know,
Everything from, your more standard basic brewing equipment up to, you know, just the really high-end stuff, including, stuff if you want to become a commercial brewer, if you want to brew at that scale,
yep.
Blickman Engineering's got you covered. They do it all from little stuff, 3 gallon up to...
5 barrel with the Blickman Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turnkey systems are in very well designed.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all by that great guy who's paid for the show for a couple of decades. So you haven't had to. Do me a favor, send him an email, feedback@blickmanengineering.com. Tell him how much you appreciate he's been paying for the show. And, you know, check out some Blickman gear next time you're up for a piece of equipment. You couldn't be buying from a nicer guy. Well, let's see here. Speaking of nice guys, Ryan asks.
Ah, our good friend Ryan.
It's you know, the one Ryan we know.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, it's that Ryan. He says, hey guys, there's a distillery in my town, Longmont, Colorado, near Boulder, that has some 15-gallon bourbon barrels they're trying to sell. I just listened to some of your older shows going over barrel aging, but I wanted to ask how many times can you age a beer in a bourbon barrel? I'm relatively new to brewing, so for now, I wouldn't be doing anything too exciting with it, probably just some dark ales. Thanks for the show. It's been extremely helpful and inspiring as I descend down the rabbit hole of brewing.
Yes, welcome to the rabbit hole, that's for sure.
Right. And a fish. Each man a brew and just ruin his life. Yes.
Yeah. 15 gallon barrel. That's a good size. That's not too large. You can use a barrel like that. Until it becomes contaminated. If it becomes contaminated.
Well, even after it becomes contaminated, you can always treat it with hot water. And, yeah. Kill anything and start over. The thing about bourbon barrels, generally, at least for me, you can only use them once in order to, when you're looking for flavor extraction to develop that bourbon flavor. that's all, you know, because of the way people expect bourbon flavor, you could use it a second time, but the bourbon flavor is going to be far lighter. I mean, it's going to be subtle, and you're going to get a lot more tannin and wood bite out of it. So here at Heretic, we never, well, we will use them the first time for a bourbon forward beer like Incubus that we do.
Okay.
Then we will use them a second time for something where the bourbon is just kind of a subtle background note. And really, we're looking more for the oak and the tannins.
Okay.
And we'll, you know, hit it with bugs, and we'll make something like Twig and Berries, which is a second use bourbon barrels with, I think we put Torment in there, which is a Belgian strong dark. Bourbon barrels with elderberries, and it sits in there a long time. It's a 10% beer, so it's very difficult to sour. Mm-hmm. So we add souring organisms, we add Brett, we add and we leave it in the barrel there, you know, for a good year plus, and then we add the elderberries, and so it takes quite a while to develop that, but we would never try and do just bourbon barrel beer in a bourbon barrel a second time. The variance on the flavor is going to be so huge. You're just going to be disappointed with it, I think.
Oh, I remember during the barrel aging show that we did, you said that generally you use wine barrels because they're much sturdier than bourbon barrels.
Oh, yeah. Bourbon barrels are really thin. So they're not as durable. Wine barrels tend to be, you know, substantially thicker. So you'll get more oxygen ingress. If organisms are working their way through the wood to get into your precious liquid, they'll get through a bourbon barrel much faster because it's thinner wood. Okay. But, you know, also, you know, the amount of oxygen that gets in is greater.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
But, yeah, I mean, you certainly could use them again. And, you know, again, I'm saying, you can't really use them to get bourbon flavor again.
Okay.
You can use them to, you know, make other things like a sour beer or, you know, just an oak aged beer with a subtle amount of bourbon.
Like a vanilla porter or something.
Yeah, sure. There was, back in the day when, you know, people first were doing bourbon barrel aged beers. Up here, I think it was up here. It's one of the breweries up here. And they would, they told me they did was they would age beers in the barrels twice. And they would use a barrel twice.
Okay.
And then get rid of the barrel. And the twice was they'd get the first one and then they would blend it with the second one. Oh. So they're trying to, because of the cost of the barrels, they're trying to extract as much of the barrel character as possible. And then just blending it to get a flavor that they thought was the best. So,
okay.
You know, even, you know, then I've never heard of somebody try and use it more than once for the bourbon character other than blending it back.
Yeah.
You know.
Good to know. Good to know.
So, but certainly you can use it until the thing falls apart. Till as long as it's holding liquid, you know, no matter what happens to it. And you know, you can fill the thing with really hot water. Be very careful. It's extremely dangerous, but you could fill it with, you know, we have 180 degree water sitting around. So we'll fill a barrel with that and it makes it hot to the touch on the outside. Well, Nat, hot to the touch on the outside. And, you know, it essentially kills everything that's in there. It pasteurizes that. So that's, you know, you start over fresh and what you just get is, you know, wood character, not very much wood character. Eventually they go neutral.
Okay.
You're just using it for the, you know, oxidative staling type of thing. Okay. Let's see. Tom, he writes, hello, I just wanted to share something in reference to a comment made about barrel aging that I recently heard during the three-part series. We did a three-part series on barrel aging?
Yeah, yeah. We really stretched it out.
We milked that for all it's worth. Here we are back with questions. Let's see. I agree that aging clean beer without yeast sediment in the barrel for an extended period of time is necessary to avoid off flavors from the dead yeast. Okay. He agrees. However, I have had tremendous success following an old English tradition of adding dates and figs to barley wine at the end of the aging period. I take a few pounds of each and boil them down with sugars. It's a giant paragraph here, Tom. Break it up. Boil them down with water to make a sterile puree and add that into the barrel with some fresh yeast to help ferment out the freshly added sugars. The new fermentation period is supposed to drive out oxygen that moved in and then freshen up the stale beer. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks for the 31 gallons of beer to return clear again before I keg it. I have not noticed any off flavors from the yeast cake that forms within the 2 month window. Not sure how quickly the dead yeast starts to break down, but for me, 2 months has been working. Thanks for all the shared information. I found the three-part series informative. For reference, I used 30 gallon barrels from Koval Distillery in Chicago that were used to age rye whiskey. I have 3 barrels and use each one 3 times before the oak flavor is no longer present. Yeah, the oak is going to last longer than, you know, any bourbon or whiskey flavor. That goes right out pretty quick. But you'll get oak for, you know, three or more times, depending on what type of beer you put in there, how long it's in there. The first batch I'll age for 9 months, the second for 12 months, and the third for 15 months.
Wow.
However, that is kind of pushing it. The third batch, I will have to add some oak chips to get the flavor profile where I want it. Tom, that's interesting information, Tom. I like that idea of adding the dates and figs and such and to like a barley wine or something after aging and adding fresh yeast. You know, we've talked previously about how adding fresh yeast to a barrel aged beer, to a stale beer, can brighten it up and remove the staling. The Brett definitely does it. I imagine other yeasts will as well. So I think he's right. If you could add, more sugars and an active fermentation to this beer that's been aging for some time, you'll still get some of that aged character, but it will brighten it up, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine the boiled figs and dates add some deep fruity flavors and so on. Mm-hmm.
Well, because that's kind of the flavors you're going for.
Yeah. You know,
in an aged barley one. Sounds delicious. Yeah. I think we should start requiring people when they submit questions to submit beer samples with them.
Huh? Yeah. Just don't use UPS. We haven't had good luck with them.
right. Been getting beers for shows, then they show up like a week after the show. I'm like, that ain't working out. I think that's fascinating. It makes me want to add some dates and figs to a barley wine in a barrel. See, perfect for my new little 5-barrel brewery.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Come up and I could bring some dates with me and we could brew. Right.
You mean the fruit, right?
Yes. The fruit. Definitely.
Okay. All right. Let's do this. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more of your questions on barrel aging right after this.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on 2 gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller, and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking barrel-aged beers, barrel-aging. We did a really nice three-part series back in the day.
I thought you did that a very good job on that.
Well, there you go. Thank you very much. But questions about barrel-aging still pour in. Adam asked Jamel and John, first of all, thanks for sharing all of your knowledge. Your balls are huge.
AC/DC is a song by that name. Yeah.
You know, but he's talking about, you know, the dances. Yes.
Right. Yes. That's right.
Yeah. We do have big balls. I would love to hear a show on wood aging, chips, barrels, cubes, and spirals. I'd love to hear what both of you have to say on the subject. Thanks in advance. Well, Adam, apparently, we did a show on barrel aging, wood aging. I'm sure we covered wood aging and chips and alternatives back. Just got to search the archives. It's only like 1,000 shows you have to look through to find the right one.
series last January, though.
Really?
So it wasn't too long ago. Yeah.
Seems like forever to me. Really, this is why we suggest you just start at the beginning, listen to all of them, you know, and then certain things will make sense. Like why we are the way we are.
Why we have gray hair. Yeah.
I don't see you having gray hair. Why is my hair gray and yours not? What's going on, John? Are you doing the
Grecian formula kind
of? You're right. The men's hair dye thingy. You using spray on?
No, I think it's just the lighting in here.
Let's see. Chips, barrels, cubes, and spirals. You know, do you have a preference, John? I mean, you know, taking everything into account. You know, convenience, price. Mm-hmm. Result. Let's say that you know, which one do you prefer?
You know, I've used chips. Them. Yeah. I think the spirals are a good way to go because they hold together. You can reuse them. Chips make a mess and you really can't,
right.
I'm not a big wood fan when it comes to beer. I have a fairly narrow appreciation of styles, for all that I judge. But wood aged beer is not my typical favorite. Although you know I do occasionally come across some real winners that are just wonderful. But I don't brew many myself. But when I have, I've used chips. Or I haven't when we've done a club barrel, which turned out really well. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of a convenient form to use, I think the spirals would be a good one.
Mm-hmm. For me, I'm with you, John. Chips are just a mess. The way I've determined to use chips when I still have used them is I will, you know, put them in hot water and, you know, boil them or whatever. Just, you got to keep in mind that, you know, chips, they're going to be rife with Brett. Most of these wood products have Brett in them and chips, especially ton of Brett. So Brett and bacteria. So if you don't want that in your beer, keep that in mind. But you can pressure cook them, things like that. And you can kind of extract the oak out of them quite well. Mm-hmm. They do quite well in extracting oak into water, hot water. And then you could use that to dose your beer. And you could try extracting them in alcohol, but I don't know. You know, that does sort of work.
To get more of the alcohol character from the chip than you do the oak character.
Right.
I think.
Cubes I really like. I thought cubes were really convenient. They weren't very expensive. You could get them at different levels of toast.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you could toss them in through the little opening and they'd come back out easily. You know, you could toss them in a carboy, and when you comes time to dump the tube and the yeast and all that and the cubes, you know, they come right back out. So I really liked cubes, and I thought I got good results with cubes. Spirals, I haven't used a lot of spirals. One, they tend to be more expensive. They were larger, a lot of them were larger. They have come out with more narrow ones that'll fit into the carboys more easily. Mm-hmm. And I think if you have a barrel that is not very oak forward, or you want to develop more flavors, you know, spirals, a lot of good surface area. And like John's saying, easy, you know, you could reuse them. It might be worth cleaning a spiral, you know, muck off a spiral,
yeah,
toasting it with a torch or something, and then throwing it back in. If you're dealing with cubes, no bueno. You know, it's just not worth it. Just buy new.
Yeah.
Same thing with chips. Chips are impossible to reuse. Barrels themselves, I think, are my favorite, though. It's a problem when, you know, you're working with a large barrel and you want to, you know, fill it up. And if you go to a small barrel, you can get too much extraction for the surface, you know, for the beer you're
dealing with.
Yeah, so there are a lot of problems. There's costs, handling, you know, and mainly I think for a lot of people it's cost and just the convenience of filling it. So if I was homebrewing, I'd do cubes or spirals, I think. You know, spirals, especially if you wanted to kind of toast your own and kind of mess around with, you know, toasting, then spirals, you know, in a good torch, I think you're off and running.
Yep.
Oh, there you go. Steve writes, "Gents, I'm opening a brewery in northern Alabama. He said he will send Mufasa a personalized invitation. Being so close to Tennessee, I have access to oak barrels used in the production of bourbon, rum, and wine. Here's my question. Based on your vast experience, or should I say vast experience, what would you suggest placing in the rum barrel? I was thinking a floral saison would complement the subtle flavors of the oak and rum without overpowering them. Your comments and or suggestions would be greatly appreciated."
Does rum have flavor?
It does, but a lot of it is really just from being aged in used bourbon barrels.
Yeah. So I was thinking, I've had some very nice rums, especially the ones that come from Solera's. Mm-hmm. But so many of the standard rums, it's almost like talking about vodka barrel. You get some hotness from alcohol, but you really wouldn't get a whole lot of flavor. That being said, I think a floral saison or a saison made with floral character hops, yeah, that probably would do well.
Yeah, there are some rums that are made from should I say like swampy sugars and molasses and things like that that have quite an intense flavor, and then with the barrel aging, they develop some really interesting flavors and character. And a mm-hmm. lot of it is, you know, the ferment and the alcohols that were produced, the distillation. It really does, you know, create other esters, you know, throughout that. And then, you know, the barrel aging and the kind of the development of, you know, some caramelization flavors from the toast in the barrel, and then the old bourbon barrel that was used. You know, so there's a fair amount of flavor that can be developed, but I think, you know, that's generally not a rum that's made in the U.S. Sometimes it is, I guess.
Yeah.
It tends to be more of, you know, some of those unique island ones. But I think, you know, Steve's right. You know, something like a Saison would be a good choice. You know, if you wanted to go something bigger, maybe something even like a Maybach in a rum barrel, or,
yeah,
you know, I would tend to, yeah, Saison.
What about a triple?
A triple, sure. Belgian Golden, you know, maybe even, I wonder if something like a Goza would work out well. I don't know. Goza works out really well in like tequila barrels. And I think there's some kind of overlap, you know, between those kinds of characters.
It's the salt and lime. Yeah.
I wonder what else. But yeah, I would think, you know, a nice Saison would be good. But something blonde, I think, would be the best possible choice.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more of your questions right after this.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. I want to tell you about my good friends at Brew Chatter out in Sparks, Nevada, right next to Reno. Great folks, great homebrew shop, all sorts of cool things in there. If you wanted to do some barrel aging, they've got chips and cubes and staves and spirals and everything you could possibly, plus the knowledge of how to make the best of those. So check them out, brewchatter.com. Say hi to RJ and Josh there. Have a beer at their fine little bar in there while you're shopping around. It is probably one of the best homebrew shop experiences.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, next time you're up, we should go to Reno.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of fun in Reno, and Reno's a great town. I'm not that much of a gambler, but you know, the restaurants that they have, the food available, you know, the breweries, distilleries, the, you know, they got everything up there. It's just really cool. It's you know, I wouldn't even, it's not like Vegas. Mm-hmm. It's, you know,
it beats the hell out of Elk Grove. That's for sure. Yeah.
You've just pissed off everyone in Elk Grove. They will hate you forever.
I should preface that and say they, Elk Grove, you still have one up on Vacaville.
Damn, John, what is it? You just hate everywhere that I've lived? What are you throwing shade now?
Beer.
John's gotten drunk. That's the problem. Well,
so we were talking about beer, right?
Reno is quite lovely. Yes. Okay. We're talking about beer. And yeah, check out brewchatter.com, our fine new sponsor. You've just got me all verklempt now. I don't know what I'm doing. If you're listening live, feel free to add in your questions into the chat. You just type them into the comment section under the video there that you're watching. The lovely Miss Bevo will pass those on to us so we can cover your questions. Let's see. Doug asks, at what temperature did Jamel store his kegs when aging for extended periods of time? Fridge temps, cellar temps, etc. Kegs and barrels. Yeah, boy. Depends on what we're talking. So when you want to age something in a barrel, I've always observed the rule of 20C, which is something that a lot of people do, which is, you know, you want to keep it below 20C. Okay. You don't really want to go above that. You don't want wild swings in temperature either. Some temperature variation is good, helps the beer, wine, spirit,
helps it breathe.
Age. Yeah. Yeah. Helps the migration into the wood. The thing about it is you don't want to go too cold because you're going to arrest any, you're going to slow development. You don't want to go too warm. You can develop certain flavors. So especially when you're dealing with something that's live, if you've got like Brett or bacteria, something like that, it's extra important. If you are talking about lagering, for example, you want to take advantage of yeast activity in lagering. You want to very slowly drop those temperatures, and then you want to, you know, a maximum of, you know, 3C a day. You want to not go below 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So you want to keep it up around 45, 48, you know, around in there. If you're doing lagering, you know, 45, 44. Something around in there, Fahrenheit, if you want that activity. If you are just cold conditioning a beer, I generally held them in at fridge temperatures around 36, 38 degrees Fahrenheit. I have cold conditioned stuff down below 30 degrees, you know, down around 20, 29, 28 degrees Fahrenheit. Our friend Charlie Bamforth is a big proponent of cold conditioning, and for a number of days will improve a lot of aspects of a beer. So one of the things it does is help drop out you know, material from the beer, helps you know, get rid of the remaining yeast, things like that. So
makes it very bright, drops the very fine haze that can.
Right. Any chill haze and things like that, you know, you can hope to your finings and stuff and get all that to drop out. So extended periods of time. I mean, there were things that I would store warm as well for, you know, in kegs. So, you know, we talk about barrel aging, you know, the same kind of thing applies to, you know, stainless aging, you know, stainless barrel aging. If you have, you know, something in a keg, we do a beer called a Taffel Bully, which is, it was actually the first beer we ever brewed. And we would store it in stainless. So what we do is we brew a kind of a Belgian table beer and ferment it with like 530 yeast. And then we dose it with Brettanomyces. And then we store it in steel kegs. And we'll keep it in there for a year or more. And the Brett will work and develop, but it has a completely different flavor to it than if it has access to oxygen in something like a barrel aged beer. Oh. So that's one of the things about barrel aging is the amount of oxygen that's getting through. And different barrels, one of the reasons different barrels will have different character is because some of them are allow more oxygen through. It just depends on the wood, you know, and they're all unique, little precious flowers, and each one has its own character. And so that can be, you know, part of the problem is, you know, getting too much oxygen. So we would stainless age it, and it develops a completely different Brett character. So that's an example.
More funky, less funky. How would you characterize it?
Less funky, less funky, and more. You know, it's this kind of clean Brett character, which is really nice, without too much funk. And you know, so you do that without oxygen. Again, you want to keep it, you know, respect that 20 degrees C limit. So don't store your barrels or kegs or things like that where it gets hot. And you don't want to store it where it would get really cold, you know, just, you know, living temperatures.
Okay.
Yeah. Are best for that. I lost my train of thought. There was something else. I don't know. There you go. I'm getting old.
Good question, though.
I'm wearing out. Yeah, that is a good question. Let's see here. Bourbon Bungs. Nelson writes, "Hey guys, first off, thanks for all the free info and advice you put out on the air. Keeps me entertained. I am always learning something new. I just revisited the old wood aging podcast for a refresher on using oak. I plan to add some to an Imperial Stout currently in the fermenter. I'm confident on how I'm going to use the oak, but I have a question for you about another type of wood, poplar. A homebrewer friend recently toured through a bourbon country in Kentucky, and picked up some bungs from a few distilleries. The bungs are made of poplar.
Yeah.
We were thinking about adding portions of some bungs to his Imperial Stout along with the oak. My questions are, do you think contact with the poplar will add any off flavors? Would we be better off just adding a shot of bourbon? Or are the bungs and bourbon a waste of time? Are we going to get enough bourbon-esque character just from adding oak? Thanks and regards, Nelson."
Okay, yeah, that's an interesting question. The bung generally is not part of the barrel. It may have some bourbon on it, but it's not going to give you the oak character that you'd be looking for, or the bourbon character that you'd be looking for. It's made of poplar because poplar is a more porous wood, and it's basically used more of as a spile, I would imagine.
Poplar is fairly hard.
Well, yeah, but it's the softest of the hardwoods, compared to oak.
It's cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap,
and it's easier to form into a bung shape.
Yeah,
because if you're trying to, you know, crank out tons of bungs that get hammered in and then thrown away after being used.
Yeah, it compresses a little bit, so it would, you know, hammer down and stick in the hole well. Mm-hmm. Not. I don't think you would look to that for beer, for character for your beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you know, what kind of flavor would you get out of poplar? I haven't tasted much poplar. It wouldn't be piney. It would just kind of generic woody kind of.
I know that whenever I've had, you know, poplar or aspen stored for firewood, it will get Brett and mold in it and smell pretty funky after a while. Mm-hmm. Not a character I would want in a beer.
But, yeah. You know, I've had a number of beers where people have, you know, Spanish cedar and, you know, all sorts of other types of woods. And it's become a thing where people are trying to sell us all sorts of different woods for aging beer. And I'm just like, I've never liked any of those that I've tasted. So, you know, I'm not really sure I want to mess with it. You know, just can kind of be an odd flavor. I wouldn't say don't do it, but I'd say make yourself do it in a small batch. Take one of those bungs and, you know, maybe fill up a quart mason jar and, you know, and then try that and see what you get from that.
versus, that's a good idea.
Risking a large batch. I mean, off flavors from the poplar. Usually any flavors are coming from, I mean, you know, something like pine. I've had pine aged beers and it's just like that weird
turpentine
kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know if you'd get that from poplar.
I wouldn't think so.
Or if you would, it'd be to a lesser extent, maybe.
Yeah. I would just be cautious about, I mean, you know, smell the bung. What do you smell? That's probably what's going to be coming off in the beer.
What do you get when you smell your bung, John?
Just pure oak, you know, vanilla.
Is your bung poplar?
I don't know. I haven't looked at it. Silicone, probably.
I don't know. Maybe my bung is poplar. It could be, you know. It's got its own Instagram account, so yeah.
There you go.
It's pretty popular.
Yeah, sounds.
Would we be better off just adding a shot of bourbon? If you're trying to get character. Bourbon flavor.
Yeah.
Yes. In a lot of cases, I think, you know, especially when people are, you know, they'll take wood and they will, you know, soak it in bourbon and then they'll add that to their beer and soak that in their beer. I'm always just like, well, you know, you just add a shot of bourbon and, you know, I tried in the past kind of cooking down the bourbon, driving off some of the alcohol before adding it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that seemed to work, but you do drive off some of the flavor. A lot of the flavor in bourbon is kind of a caramelized wood, oaky, caramelized character.
Okay.
You know, some esters, you know, a lot of the vanilla from, you know, the American oak.
Yep.
So I imagine you could, there are bourbon flavoring extracts and stuff where, I don't know how popular this is, but they sell essences or something that you take like cheap vodka and you blend it with one of these essences.
Yeah.
And then you got yourself, you know, super discount bourbon or tequila or whatever.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, you know, could you take one of those and add that to a beer and thus get, you know, your bourbon flavor or tequila flavor that way?
You probably could. Yeah.
Right. Could. How good it would be, I don't know. Would it be better than just adding a shot of bourbon? Quite possibly. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's see. Are the bungs and bourbon a waste of time? You're going to get enough bourbon-esque character just from adding oak. That is a big part of the flavor. I did some experiments with tequila at one time, and you know, a big part of tequila flavor is really the oak. And a lot of tequilas are done in used bourbon barrels. So the world works off of used bourbon barrels because bourbon barrels, by law, can only be used once. So every time bourbon is set up, it has to be done in a new American oak barrel. And so after that, the bourbon producers, they're just like, I got no use for this thing. So they used to be dirt cheap. You used to be able to get them pretty much for free. Mm-hmm. Then they got to be like $25, and then they went up to $50, $75. And at the height of new craft breweries opening, you pay $450, $500 for a barrel because there was a shortage of them.
Wow.
And then a lot of those places closed that were paying $450 for a used barrel. And the price sank back down. I think it's ranging right now, you know, about $125, $150 for the barrel. And then if you got to ship it, it can be a couple hundred dollars just to ship a barrel.
Yeah.
Because you can't fit that many on a pallet. You know, it really, really ends up being pretty pricey. So that's, you know, one of the issues with bourbon barrels. But they used to send them all over the world. They used to send major truckloads of them down to Mexico for tequila production, and they would buy them for Scotch whiskey out in Scotland, and they'd send them out for you know wines, ports, rum. Everybody was just like, they didn't care. They just wanted a barrel. They didn't care what, you know, that it had bourbon in it. You know, that was not a big deal. So, you know, a lot of these things, like we're talking about rum earlier and all these, you know, there's a crossover. And I think Nelson's right. A lot of it is in the oak.
Yeah.
That wood flavor. So, you know, like we were talking before, cubes and chips and spirals and stuff. You can do all that.
Toast your own.
Toast your own bung. Yes. There you go, John. All right. Let's take one more short break and we'll wrap it up after this.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. Mike was saying I tried to ferment instead of age in a 3-gallon bourbon barrel, which is a big mistake. Yes. You don't want to ferment in your bourbon barrels or in any barrel. I tried that in the past, and that was a big problem because what happens is you get just a ton of yeast in the barrel, and it can be one, it just makes a mess. And
Hard to clean out.
So it's always good to try and, ferment in your glass or stainless or whatever, and then transfer the clear beer to the barrel, and you'll be much better off that way. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Another joy, John, to experience your comments on your bung.
Silicone bung preferred. Yeah. Right. Easy to clean.
Easy to clean. Easy to insert. Takes lube well. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those reasons.
Yeah. Just like our good friend John Blickman.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, you might send him a nice email telling him how much you enjoy. That he's paid for the show. Feedback at BlickmanEngineering.com. Check him out. Check out our good friends at Brew Chatter as well.
RJ and Josh,
yeah. And until then, everybody, we'll see you next week when we're going to have Michael Fairbrother on.
From Line Meadery.
And we're going to talk some mead. He's sending us some delicious samples. And I know his samples will arrive before the show.
That's right.
I trust him to do that. All right. Till then, everybody, brew strong.
Brew strong, everyone.